Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Pink University Blog Talk Radio Program, where we reignite your passion, your purpose, and your play. Find us at www.hotpinkyou.com. Take it away, ladies.
Hello and welcome to Hot Pink University Blog Talk Radio Life Class. Once again, I'm Christy Bemis, author, speaker, and psychotherapist, and sex and relationship coach. I'm so glad you're here today, and I'm so glad that I have a wonderful guest here today to talk about the topic around shame, which I think is such an important topic in our life. And I applaud the work of Brené Brown, really bringing the research around shame to the forefront and to the top of our minds as we unpack this huge topic today. And I have a special guest with me all the way from Portland, Oregon. So I'm super excited to have Kira Wackett here with us of Adversity Rising. And I'll talk a little bit more about her, but welcome. This is your chance as you listen to grab your journal, grab a pen, grab a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, and join us for this life class as we work with women to reignite you to your passion, your purpose, and especially your play. And even though our topic today might sound heavy, I think you're going to be really surprised at how light you're going to feel at the end of the episode, because by unpacking the load around shame, we lighten that shame backpack that we wear throughout our day. And so that's what we're going to be doing today. So even though the topic might feel daunting to you out there as you're listening, it's really going to lighten your load and reconnect you with your true, authentic self. And that's what I'm all about this year, is authenticity. It's like my key word, my key phrase of being as authentic as you can be. And we're only going to be tapping into a little piece of who Kira is today in our time together, because she's also going to be joining me, and you'll get to actually see her and you'll get to actually see me on my new YouTube channel, Living Authentic as Fuck. And so I'm super happy to have her back as a guest towards the end of the month, but we're just going to dive into and scratch the surface a little bit around this. And so if you want to find out more about me, you can find me at www.hotpinkyou.com. I'm also on Facebook as Hot Pink University, and I am also on Instagram, and you'll find all kinds of juicy, inspiring ways to reignite your life with a little bit more passion. So welcome today. We're going to sit back and dive in, and I want to introduce a little bit about my guest before I actually bring her on. Her path and my path have really woven quite interestingly through the last several years of our lives. When I was working at the state as a school mental health consultant, and she was doing a lot of really incredible work with an agency, working as a licensed mental health therapist. And then she was doing all this like really incredible side gig stuff that I was so intrigued. And if anybody who knows me, you know I'm attracted to super authentic women that don't necessarily walk to the drumbeat of what society tells us we should look like, we should wear, we should do, we should be. And so Kira for me was always this attraction, because she was doing this like incredible stuff around reclaiming beauty and incorporating art and adversity rising. And so it was really wonderful to reconnect with her many years later, and really I'm excited to drop in with her. So let's welcome her as our guest today. Hi, Kira. I'm so glad to be dropping in with you and spending this time with you, and welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. I was just listening to you. I just felt my heart get so warm thinking about, like you said, the journey we've been on and how we've been able to connect in such different ways since we've met.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've always just been so curious. I remember when you were doing some work around reclaiming beauty. I hope we can talk a little bit about that work a little as we weave into shame, which is such a heavy topic. But like I said at the top, it's going to lighten your load. So how are we going to lighten the load for women today. Tell us a little bit about what we're going to be talking about.
Well, I think I love the description of lightening the load and this idea of, again, kind of taking off the heaviness of what we're carrying throughout the day. So one of the things that I think is so important and often missed in the world and the culture of self-help and growth and wellness is we're kind of inundated with quick fixes and fast solutions. I call them Band-Aid solutions. So this idea of something's upsetting me, something's bad, let's fix it, let's do whatever we can do. And probably anybody listening to this has experienced this in some way. I experience it all the time, even knowing what I know. But it's this idea of, okay, whatever's going on, we need to get rid of it quickly so we can get about our day and move forward. And that doesn't work. We feel this sort of temporary relief, and then it comes back and it feels even stronger, and it just keeps weighing us down in a different way. And so when I really think about what it means to release something, to let go of something, to feel lighter, so much of that I think comes from building insight and really understanding what it is that we're experiencing so that we feel a little bit of a greater sense of ownership and awareness around what's going on and what we can do with it. So I think our goal today, at least for me, is to help people maybe understand not only what shame is, but how it might be showing up in their lives, and then talk about what some of those initial ways might be to start to feel it, validate it, and move through it so that it doesn't feel like we are taking it with us every single moment and compounding it throughout our days.
I love that. Yeah. If you had to, because there's so many definitions that are out there around shame, and especially I referenced Brene Brown kind of bringing shame to the forefront. And I love playing around with, when I think of words, I look up the definition. But if you had to really define shame and what it means for you and the women and probably men that you work with, what would you define shame as being?
Shame to me is the activation of a very specific fear response when we perceive or feel a threat to connection and belonging. So it is, we know we have tons and tons of research at this point to know that connection and belonging is necessary for survival. It's not optional. It's not a luxury. We need to feel a sense of connection in order to survive in the world. And so shame is this deeply rooted fear-based response that is meant to get kicked up or activated anytime there could be a threat to this connection that we need in order to function and survive in the world.
I love that. And we'll keep referencing that particular definition. When I look at some of quotes, Brene Brown has the one of shame is the warm feeling that washes over us, making us feel small, flawed, and never good enough. And when I was having you kind of send me some things in preparation for the show, that was one of the key phrases that really jumped out at me is never good enough, like that good enough feeling. That we have. And one of the things you referenced was the fear of, I think you said the word connection. Fear of like, we're not going to be connected. And so it pumps into that fear of belongingness, right? If we're not connected, if we're not good enough, where do we belong?
Exactly. And I think that, so in my training, a lot of, I think the language and even just in sort of general speak, I think cognitive behavioral therapy tends to kind of be a leading force or a driving force in terms of some of the language that we use. So a lot of people might have heard of the term core beliefs. I've heard it much more commonly referred to, at least as of late, as limiting beliefs. But really what I think is a helpful way to anchor our understanding of shame is to go deeper, because if we really think about how we're describing this right now, shame is an emotion. Shame is a reaction. It is rooted in something much deeper. So it's activated to respond to these beliefs underneath. And so for anyone that's familiar with those core beliefs, the beliefs that we have about ourselves and our place in this world, and where I think it can be really helpful. And where I think that initial stage of lightning comes into play is realizing that this is a universal experience. And so, you know, for 0.0001, 2, maybe 3% of the population, their belief when they are born is, I'm inherently worthy, good enough, and lovable simply by being born. Simply by being present on this earth, I have connection, belonging, value. The rest of us, no matter what intention, experiences that we've had, we've internalized beliefs that we are only good enough, worthy, and lovable if fill in the blank. And obviously, all of our different stories, our experiences, the depth of what that looks like for us might be different. But if we, even on kind of a base level, it's thinking about how somebody with certain grades is treated than somebody with maybe lower grades in the school setting, thinking about how dressing a certain way, acting a certain way, even if we think about identities in our culture, race, gender, sexual orientation, these things that get sort of taught to us that you aren't good enough, but here's the solution. So if you do these things, if you act this way, if you look this way, if you can perform a certain way, then you're good enough. And that's when we shift from feeling like we belong and trusting in belonging to trying to fit in. And that's really that shift, that pivot into trying to fit in is when shame kind of gets its legs and starts to clinch into or kind of dig its way into our storyline.
And it's such a desire at such a young age to fit in, to not be different, to not be unique, to not stand out. But I think as we enter into our adulthood, I know as we enter into our adulthood, fitting in is stifling. It's not fun. It holds us back from like our truest sense of being. And it definitely disconnects us from the number one relationship that I think we have in our life, which is ourselves. So in our pursuit of trying to connect and fit in with others, we are disconnecting from self in such a big way because we're not honoring our authenticity. And I think that's why it's become such, in my 50s, such an important word for me is, this is my life. Like this is, this, I get to choose, you know. And when I think about shame, and I work with mostly women, but I'm also working with couples and sometimes men, I think about shame versus guilt. And so shame is that I am that horrible, awful thing, that label, whatever that is, where guilt is like actually a good human experience to have. Like it helps you course correct and go, okay, I'm not, my behavior is not lining up with my values or beliefs about who I am. And so I need to like course correct, and it's an action oriented feeling to have, where shame is that stuck, mired in the mud, I can't get out of it feeling, and it's super heavy. And so how do you help those that you work with really unpack shame? And you talked at the top of our time, Band-Aid, not a Band-Aid approach, which I know that sometimes as a mom, I'm often guilty of doing, like, here's a Band-Aid, you know. But how do you help and support people to really deeply unpack that and lighten their shame load?
I think, you know, so what you were describing of that kind of disconnection with self, that really is the root of the pain point is there's a term that was used a lot when we started to get initial data about how social media was affecting kind of identity development for specifically, I think the research was done on teens and adolescents, but we've seen this now for people of any age. But it's this idea of personality disintegration. So it really is the separation from self. We kind of have this internal, who am I, versus this external performance. And those two are very different. So when I'm first working with somebody, it starts with this basic universality, which, you know, everybody feels it. We are meant to feel it. It is an emotion. It doesn't have to consume us. Just really some of that basic psychoeducation or just awareness building of this is what it is. This is why it shows up. This is how it thinks it's helping you. Because I think that is a key piece to understand that it's similar to when we talk about any element of fear, there's sort of a continuum. Is going to show up. The problem isn't that it's showing up, even though it would be great if we could eradicate it. It makes sense if we really get at its root of what it thinks it's doing. It's trying to protect us from disconnection. So it makes sense we feel it. So really first, I think, not making it the enemy, but bringing awareness as to where it kind of got too much power. Because now it started to control everything we did. It started to shift everything we did. And so a lot of my initial work is the insight building, really thinking about how did this get developed? Where did this get developed? Where was this protective? So my part of my specialty area in my therapy practice is eating disorders. And that's a lot of the conversation we have is how has this been a form of protection for you, for yourself in so many ways. And then we start to really work on, so what does it look like to dismantle that? And I think this kind of gentle back and forth between building elements of distress tolerance and allowing ourselves to sit in the discomfort of kind of unwiring and rewiring our brain to function a different way, and then knowing when to push in that. And so, you know, what does that look like to recognize, okay, this is the performance self. This is what I should do. You know, one thing that we see very commonly with people who identify as female is that there's this conditioning or sort of this shame-based response to make ourselves smaller, to not have any needs, not have any wants. You put everybody else's needs above you, and that's the way that you get worth and value. So how do we build awareness around that and where maybe you're doing that, where you're minor, small things like not having a preference over the radio station that you listen to or things like that. And then how do we empower you to make a different choice or to respond differently in those moments? And then again, balancing that with kind of processing distress tolerance and slowly building that sense of self-efficacy and the dismantling of that shame-based response system.
There's so much that's coming up for me, and I remember a time where my son really called me out on kind of a shame response I was having, or a protective performance response that I was having, because he had like shared with me that his older brother was dealing with cancer. And meanwhile, I was working and operating, like my parents were coming for a visit, and I was working and operating like a track meet for my daughter. So I was just like, let's just stuff this down. Like, let's just have a good evening for grandma and grandpa, and we'll tell them tomorrow morning. And meanwhile, my son was just like suffering, you know, and like, he like, this isn't going to work for me, mom. And I actually ended up like putting him in the car and driving him home. And he was in his 20s, but he called me out, and he's like, you can't just compartmentalize like that, mom. Like, we actually sometimes have to stop life and deal with the stuff, you know, that's hard, that's deep. And I think we're so like in that performance of protecting ourselves from any discomfort, from any uncomfortable feelings that we might be having. And so we develop these ways of like, you know, just performing, putting on a happy face and moving throughout our days. And he really called me out. And that was a very big turning point for me of like, okay, it's not my job like to protect and make sure everybody's having comfortable feelings. And here this like young 20-year-old is calling his almost 50-year-old mama out on it. And so I think what I hear you saying is that shame needs that place to stop and have a space to process, which is what your coaching and your therapy does for people, is it provides container of space that we so often don't allow ourselves because we just keep moving on to move on, and we're outcome oriented and we're, you know, goal oriented. And sometimes to do this work, we need to stop and take the time and find the safe spaces to unpack where that shame is coming from and the core development of that shame.
Yeah, I mean, and even thinking with what you're describing, some of the work around that would then be pausing to say, what was the fear if you stopped in that moment and made space for that? What, because it's self-oriented, there was a threat for you. So what would it mean about you? How were you taking responsibility for, you know, again, other people's happiness, other people's comfort, mm-hmm. all of these different components? And what would it have said about you if everything wasn't flowing in a certain way? And that's where I love that you just pointed out the production-oriented mindset of our culture. It's very outcome-driven. And the, again, this looks different depending on where we are, but in particular in the U.S., there's this idealization of individuality, getting ahead, you know, the American dream. And what that does is it kind of stops the ability to be present in the imperfections and the messiness of life. So then we're just chasing this way of acting, of being. And I think about this being from Wisconsin originally in the Midwest, and the game, I forget what it's called, King of the Hill, I think it is, but where you have this giant snow pile after the plows come, and as kids, everybody's trying to get to the top. And the whole game is based on pushing everybody else down to the bottom to get to the top. And I just think about, you know, even looking back and thinking, how did our teachers let us play that and think that that was safe? And that's such a metaphor for realizing, like, all of us recognize that playing this game isn't safe. We recognize the hurt that we're causing to ourselves when we put the pursuit of being a certain way, being perceived a certain way, again, accommodating these certain things, how we lose ourselves. We can see it, but we keep doing it. We recognize the pain we're causing to other people, but there is such a drive because I think we've been indoctrinated with this belief of that's how you get success. That's how you get happiness. That's how you win it, whatever winning it means to you. And so part of this, I think, is also really bringing awareness to the table of kind of the systems of operation that exist that keep pulling us back into shame-based living, because part of that then is having conversations around when you make these changes, there are still going to be these very strong magnets that pull you back. So if I'm working with somebody about, you know, assertiveness is a big component of shame resilience building. And so how do you make space to feel seen, safe, and heard while doing that for other people? And a lot of the conversations I've had with clients as of late is maybe the returning to in-person work, or as things have shifted throughout the pandemic and navigating that if they're working outside of a home setting. Well, what does that look like when the pull, the company culture, the drive looks very different from the boundaries you're setting? So you're trying to set a boundary that this is what it looks like to be off of work, or I'm not going to check my email at 10 o'clock at night. I'm going to have a separation between, you know, my work life and everything else that I'm doing. But what does that look like when the company culture is such that it's not about you and taking care of yourself? It's about the work. It's about the output. And so again, all these kind of subtle erosions contribute back to, there's a term in acceptance and commitment therapy about seeing the self as content, with the goal being to shift to context. So content really is the bullet point list of what we do, or an accumulation of all of our failures. And that's kind of what we hold ourselves to versus seeing the context of a full life. And so, you know, if we go back to your example, how was your fear brain, your shame brain kind of pulling it down to the content of this is what it would look like, this is the effect, this is, again, these things we have to prevent, versus saying, what an opportunity, especially given people coming into this space, to really build this collective connection in suffering. And, you know, not that it's going to make it better or take it away, but what an opportunity if we could all just pause and be in that space together and allow for that to show up in whatever presence it needed to or was going to.
Yeah, and I think that we learn at a very early age, when you were talking about like the King of the Hill story, you know, it just resonates. There's so many memories that I have as a small girl on the playground that have contributed to my shame story. And some of them are really, you know, when I look back on it and I think from an adult vision, like there was a time I hit my chin on a playground equipment. And it just cut it open and was like bleeding profusely. And I remember hiding it in my parka hood and like walking around crying, trying to find my older sister so like she could lead me to like support and help. Like, mm-hmm. I just remember the deep, deep feeling as a little girl of feeling shame that somehow I made a mistake on the playground equipment that resulted in me getting hurt. And mm-hmm. that by showing blood or the hurt that I had, that somehow I would get laughed at. And there was a big, mm-hmm. like, embarrassment not to be too showy, not to, like, show up too big, not to, like, take up too much space or room. There was a big feeling around that. And I think that if our listeners could tap into moments of their life early, early on, and playground moments are so rich
mm-hmm.
with shame stories for us, you know, because it's like the adults just kind of let us run wild with like no rules or limits back in the day, you know. And so I think that if we can kind of look back to our childhood of moments where we just felt that deep shame and like have mm-hmm. a safe place to explore those moments, it's really empowering. I know I do that with my partner a lot. Like, when did you feel shame? And shame is super closely connected to embarrassment. And when did mm-hmm. you feel embarrassment? You know, and when we can like talk to one another and kind of unpack these stories, you can heal. There's a healing in that. There's a lightening of the load in receiving comfort from somebody in your life, whether that's your coach, your partner, or your friend. And I know as an adult, the shame stories get bigger and they get deeper. Mm-hmm. They're around topics around money. They're around topics around sex. They're around topics around our career and whether we're doing mm-hmm. enough, you know, and so they get even more loaded around jealousy, you know, when we look at like social media and then that shame around feeling the jealousy or what's happening there for us. And I remember going to a friend in my 40s with a huge shame story. And I asked her if she could contain it and hold it because I really needed a place to put it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's what you're saying is you offer too, is sometimes we don't have people in our lives or the people in our lives are like part of the shame story. So it's not a safe place to put it. And you mm-hmm. really can provide this safe place to unpack and put this.
Well, and I think, you know, what you're describing is, yeah, you have to have a sense of trust and security in order to offload it. And so there are different levels of disclosure. So maybe me talking about shame related to performance, it might be much more accessible for me to share out loud, you know, I saw how people were treated. And when I got straight A's in school, and then I had friends who didn't, and friends that were labeled the troublemakers or labeled, you know, whatever these things, these terms were, even just thinking about how people dressed and how students that dressed a certain way were treated differently than others. And I can talk pretty openly about that and then how that contributes to shame of wanting to be perfect all the time, maybe always wanting to be achieving something or success oriented. And that feels hard to say out loud, but it's a different type of hard than I think what you're talking about of like such deeply embedded shame maybe about body and feeling like I can't talk about sex out loud or I can't talk about how my feeling is as though my body is inadequate, my body is imperfect, stops me from being able to be free in this very sexual open relationship or things like that. So I think there's layers mm-hmm. of sharing and degrees of sharing. And if we're going to dismantle shame to its core in order to build a different response pattern, we kind of have to put all that on the table. And so sometimes I think it is helpful to have someone like a therapist or a coach or someone that you're talking about this with, because there's also this kind of guaranteed safety that they're holding it and then you don't have to see them for a while. So I actually think mm-hmm. it's a really helpful tool. I do this with my therapist all the time. My current therapist now is the first time I've ever talked openly about sex in therapy. And it was, I started seeing her before having my daughter, and anyone that's ever experienced kind of life changes, if you birthed or mm-hmm. had a child, the hormone changes are all over the place. And I didn't quite understand it. And I didn't know how to talk about it. And I was like, oh, we don't talk about this. You know, and I grew up Western family where nobody talks about these things. And so the shame around that and feeling like I'm failing as a partner if my mood looks different or my feelings around this are different. And so I think it can be helpful to have somebody that there's, you feel a connection to, but there's like almost a safe distance in that. And then the goal, at least for me, when I'm working with people is, how can I help be that starting point for you to have maybe a corrective experience? Because part of where this shame got built in was either directly or indirectly seeing when somebody didn't meet expectations, how were they treated? So if you didn't get the grade, how were you treated? If your body didn't look a certain way, how were you treated? If you did talk about sex, how were you treated? If you did talk about money, like seeing sort of the social silencing that has happened or the shaming that has happened. So part of it is to give that corrective experience. And then we go, how do we give you that confidence, that self-efficacy, again, those distress tolerance skills to know that you have the right to communicate that in other aspects of your life with your partner, with your friends, with your children, within a workplace setting, and then working on those levels of disclosure so that they are showing up authentically in the ways that they want to in the context of the roles that they're engaging in.
I love that term corrective experience, because when you can create that in a safe space, it's repeatable. It's not just in that safe space that you're creating with like your coach or therapist or that person in front of you. It's something that you can be successful with there and then repeat out in your life and bring your relationship closer and more intimate and more vulnerable and more connected, which is super important, because I think that's what we're all, you know, we started this conversation around, that's what we're all looking for, is connection and and a sense of belongingness. Yet can we belong and still be our unique, wonderful, you know, way enough selves in all of the relationships that we cultivate? And I feel like if you can't, then it's time to take a look at the relationship and just really see how is this serving me. I love that you're offering this self-love workbook to the listeners that you have at aversityrising.com/I love me. Tell us a little bit about what's in that workbook. And I love passion projects like this, and I know that this is totally a passion project for you. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think the topic of self-love, self-care sometimes feels really accessible for people, as opposed to saying, let's do some shame dismantling. Or again, like even as you started our talk today and you're trying to create an understanding for people, we know these are heavy topics, and oftentimes then we might feel like, ooh, that's going to be too much, or can I even get through this? This feels so overwhelming. And so there's something that I think can feel a little bit more approachable from the self-care, self-love side of things. And I was finding myself feeling frustrated because, again, I felt like so much of the work that was being done around that was systems of band-aids. So going back to that term I talked about before of, you know, here's these 10 things for self-care, or this is what self-love looks like. And what we're really losing sight of, I think, in so much of the drive to make things accessible, is we don't make space to also recognize our strengths, that we actually can do the harder work. And so actually, this was something that I learned when I was working at a state mental health agency, where we were working with people that were struggling with different mental health diagnoses, and we had a deadline for some applications to get scholarships to a conference that we were doing, and people weren't meeting these deadlines. And so we were giving people passes, essentially, saying, oh, it's okay, get it in when you can, do these things. And there was a conversation with somebody on our board who identified as struggling with a mental health issue and said, by not holding people accountable, you're subtly eroding the belief they already barely have that they are capable of doing hard things. So in this case, it might be meeting the deadline of whatever this is. So you're constantly eroding boundaries, which says you don't have the same skills and capacities as somebody else. And I think that was part of maybe where my frustration was coming in with the self-love work, was nobody needs another list of the 10 things that they can do for, you know, how to do some self-care practice at home. We all can Google that. We know it. But why are we not empowering people to do the work that we do have the strength and capacity to do? And so this workbook really came from that. It actually got launched initially as a part of work I did with a company to do a public workshop where we had people do the workbook together and build a community together. So we came back every few weeks. And so the workbook is 4 chapters and it centers around kind of building your base. And then the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th chapters are past, present, and future self. And so the goal of the work is integration of the full self, past, present, and future. So that involves this process of saying, you know, what does forgiveness look like for who I thought I was supposed to be and I'm not? What does forgiveness look like for all of the things that I have been told or have experienced, whether that's forgiveness of others or forgiveness of the self? What does this deeper dive look like to understand our shame stories? And then really moving people through this process of visualizing what we want in our futures, visualizing how we want to show up, who we want to be, the values that we hold, and then tying it into who we are now and really bringing this kind of presence and mindfulness to our life and understanding the strengths and the beauty in that past and that future and how we bring all of that into the way we show up now. And so it was a really beautiful kind of kickoff of this workbook. And then I wanted to make the workbook accessible for everyone. And so, you know, started selling it on my website. I was like, man, so much of what I loved was the community and what we can do if we are bringing people together. And so actually coming into 2022, I brought in a little bit of an enhancement with it. So coming up actually on Valentine's Day will be our first one, but we're doing these quarterly group calls. So anybody that has purchased or been gifted the workbook gets access to show up to these community-driven conversations. And the idea, we call them community connections and community conversations, is to come on and say, oh, I'm working on this part and this feels hard, or, you know, I did this thing and I'm really struggling about this, to bring that idea again of universality and self-care as a community-based practice, not just an individual practice and responsibility that if you can't figure it out, you're somehow failing and, you know, kind of inadvertently making you feel shame for something that's supposed to make you not feel shame, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that. And I love that you have the past, you know, the past, present, future self. And it's so good to have like tools and just different things that are not, like you said, Band-Aid approaches in order to really support the work that you're doing. And I want women to hear this, that there's not like this checkbox process that we go through in life where all of a sudden we just love ourselves. I think it's a lifelong journey, and I'm always growing in the love that I have for myself, my current self, and my chapters are always evolving. And so there isn't like, okay, you've reached this like pivotal point where, ta-da, the work is done and you never, you know, you're in love with yourself. It's just this ever evolving. So these tools are really great. And I want people to hear how to access it. It's on the website at adversityrising.com/iloveme. And you actually get 50% off by using a code LOVINGME, all in capital letters, LOVINGME. And that will give you the access to the self-love workbook that's being offered as a tool, but also checking out the I Love Me work group sessions that are meeting quarterly so you can dive in deeper to the topics and really get support. If you're listening to this on the Blog Talk Radio page, head over to my page and I'll put a button on there that will direct you and link you directly with this offering from Kira that she's offering for us today, or just go directly to her website and check it out from there. So I'm so glad that, you know, we have these follow-up tools, that it's not just a one-and-done conversation, that it's this ever-evolving support that we can offer people as they're kind of coming into these things. And I think, you know, podcasts are a great way to, like, get the information and content out, but then what's next is really important. So thank you for doing that. Is there anything else that you feel like you want to share or wrap up our time together around this topic of shame?
I think you kind of beautifully wrapped up the connection I see in this workbook with the conversation we have. I think to reiterate what you said about self-love as more of a journey, it really, we have a lot of evidence that shows pretty much everything meaningful in life is a practice. And so a gratitude practice, a self-love practice, what it means to love myself today is going to look very different than loving myself tomorrow, because who I am and the context of my life is going to look different each day. And so I think the beauty of this workbook, and I really want to empower people, if they do resonate with it, decide that they want to purchase it, is to show up to those conversations, because part of it is to say, you know, there's still this shame-based belief of, okay, well, now I bought the workbook, so I have the tools, so I should work through it all, get it all done, and then everything's good. And then when it's not, again, that brings us back to that point of feeling shame. The reason these things are put together is, so there's a section in there that you do values assessments. I redo a values assessment every 6 months, because the values that I have and what they mean and how they show up in my daily life change. And the awareness of recognizing, ooh, okay, so here are these values. Here are these kind of micro erosions that are happening in my daily life that are pulling me away from those. Now I don't need to shame myself for that or judge myself for that, but that constant revisiting allows more curiosity to say, oh, this is normal. We're constantly learning, tweaking, reworking our behaviors and how we show up. Makes sense that I veered off course. What does it look like to come back? Has my course changed? Has the data changed? Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, again, just reminding people that this conversation, there's no way that we could have hit on everything in 45 minutes anyways, but
right.
Mm-hmm. This is really about making space for people to realize you feel shame. I can confidently say that every person listening to it does. You are not broken, wrong, in any way screwing up. You're a human. And part of the process of kind of evolving and learning is to say, how can I get curious about what it looks like to just show up every day and understand it, understand how I'm experiencing the world, and how can I bring that invitation of self-love in here to say I can be curious without judgment and evolve each day into kind of living whatever my best life is or my most self-loving life is, or again, whatever it is in that moment, in that day, in the context of the life that I'm living. And some days we're going to do great, and some days it's going to feel not so great, but the win is purely doing it and showing up with the curiosity, what it looks like in practice or the output.
Beautiful. I love that. And I just want to say thank you so much for the work that you are doing, and thank you so much for joining me today on my life class and sharing a lot about your thoughts around shame. And I know that listeners found little golden nuggets of support and help. So thank you so much, Kira, for showing up today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm so grateful that we were able to make this time.
Absolutely. All right. We're wrapping up our time together, and I just want to thank all of the listeners for joining us today. And again, you can find Kira at Adversity Rising, where she equips people with the skills and tools to live a life on purpose. And you all know, in knowing me, I'm totally jazzed about any woman out there finding a life on purpose. I also want to remind you that Kira is going to be joining me again to dive in even deeper into these topics around like self-forgiveness, around reframing our thoughts and finding solutions. We are going to be weaving in a little bit about burnout, which I love that topic, because as women, we're all trying to do so much in our lives, and I really want you to take very, very good care of yourself. So she's going to be joining me on my YouTube channel, Authentic as Fuck, where I dive in with guests once a month. I hope you enjoyed today. I know I did. I feel, you know, a lot of like different memories came up for me, a lot of thoughts around shame and how it's played out around sex and love and money and family and performance, and all those things really came up for me. So I want you to be really gentle with yourself for the rest of today. I want you to take some time with your journal and do some of the work around maybe emotionally draining some of those thoughts that came up for you as you were listening, and just really give your time to stop the world a little bit, stop the performance a little bit, stop the outcome a little bit, and tap really into that inner sense of self. And Kira gave us such great tools today to do that and to self-reflect. And I hope you find the support that you need in order to do the work that you desire to do, to live as authentically and as shame-free as you possibly can. I'm Christy Bemis, and you can find me at www.hotpinkyou.com. I'd love if you would join my newsletter list. I always link these Blog Talk programs to that list, our guests special, like little gifts that they gave us, especially Kira's 50% off her self-love course, and I weave those into my newsletter. I have something that I drop every Friday into your mailbox, which is 5 things I'm currently thinking about, turned on about, or jazzed about, and I think that's a really great offering. I'm all about collaboration, and that's why I bring these guests on, because I learn so much, and I'm just feeling super jazzed to end our program today and myself go off with my journal and my cup of coffee and take some time for myself. I really encourage you to take that time to dream big, live with your passion, and always, always release the shame in your life. Take good care, and we'll see you on my next episode.